I would now like to introduce our guest, and her name is Gail Hike. She is a Community Development Outreach Specialist with the UW Extension Broadband and E-Commerce Education Center. She's been employed by UW Extension for 34 years. So Gail started her career as an Extension Home Economist in Price County, where she served for 15 and a half years. She then left her family living position to become the Price County Community Resource Development Educator, where she worked for 16 years. Her work focused on broadband, economic development, and organizational development. And in 2015, not too long ago, Gail joined the Broadband and E-Commerce Education Center to serve as a Community Development Outreach Specialist, where she was hired to lead what she's going to talk to us about today, which is the Connected Aging Communities Project. This has been a really good opportunity for Gail to bring together the first part of her extension career in family living and then the second half of her career as a community development educator. So her recent research looks at developing community systems that support broadband adoption by seniors as a way to help them remain independent. And so, Gail, I can let you know that the folks who are on the call this morning are excited about learning more about your work, and you can just let them know when questions are welcome, and otherwise we'll be sure to take questions at the end. So without further ado, I turn it over to Gail.
Well, great. Thanks for having me. I'm real excited to be with my family living colleagues once again. Like I said, switching jobs was a great opportunity for me to kind of blend my two parts of my career, my family living part of my career and my community development into this project, which I think is real exciting. The Broadband Center, when the center was formed, really took a look at a lot at access to broadband. And as more we know, access is still an issue, but we also talk a lot about access, adoption, affordability, and how people are actually utilizing broadband. And my work, most of my work in the project I want to talk to you today, talks a lot about how we're getting into adoption and utilization. Because we know just because we build it doesn't mean folks are going to adopt and utilize it. And that's where our efforts are starting to move within our center. Family living is one of those areas with the senior program. I'm also working a lot moving the senior and doing some intergenerational work with our two projects, so youth development. And we also have some programming going on with Ag and, of course, community development as we work with businesses as well. So talk a little bit about our project. The Connected Aging Communities Project started in late 2015, and this is actually a project that we're doing in cooperation with the Bader Foundation, Bader Philanthropists, out of Milwaukee. They actually approached the Broadband and E-Commerce Center and said, you know, we really think technology is important to help seniors stay in their home. And we like what the center is doing, and we'd like to partner with you. So I was brought on at the end of 2015 where we could take a look at the issue. So why do we even want to be concerned if elderly are online? Well, you know as well as anyone in the state that they're just becoming a growing part of our demographic. The number of communities with elderly over 65 in the double digits is increasing rapidly. Those with over 20% as we take a look at the map. Especially in that northern region, the central region, we're approaching over 30% in many of those by the time we look at 2040. So we really need to make sure that people are connected and able to take advantage of everything that's out there in life. Utilization of the internet and technology keeps people fully participating in society. We know that by doing that and utilizing it, we can improve health, one of the exciting things we've been working with are a lot of the health organizations, the hospital association, the school for nursing, some of the healthcare providers that are out there to take a look at how we can introduce this. We know that it can also help them save money. We'll take a look at cost benefit, and who's online. Unfortunately, those who have less money are the ones who are less likely to connect, but we do need to help them look at the cost benefit of being online. And utilization, the end goal is for help to help them remain independent longer. There's a real good research piece that I'd like to draw your attention. If you take a look at the fact sheet that we posted online on the coffee break section, there's a piece from Pew Research. If you haven't looked at that piece, I'd really encourage you to do that. Pew Research on who's utilizing the internet. They've taken a look at seniors, taken a look at trends. What we know now, it is increasing. About 67% of those 65 and older use the internet, and 42% of those adults 65 own smartphones. Smartphones are increasing, and we find that once we get them online, seniors are apt to utilize it every day. About 75%, once they're comfortable with the internet, will utilize it about every day. Has anyone used the looked at the Pew site at all? Nope. Okay. So, what's our project look like? Well, the first 11 months, we worked to just take a look at what's out there as far as the research goes. We created an advisory committee to take a look at where our direction was going. We looked at some of the best practices in literature and interviews. We looked at some of the things that were out there in Wisconsin. We looked at across the country and looked at some of the international programs that were out there. We did a series of focus groups in north central Wisconsin. I did 7 focus groups. Those focus groups looked our participation had seniors, they had organizations, educators, nonprofits, healthcare providers. So we had a broad range of folks that, because we really wanted to see if what we were reading in the research and literature from across the country and the state really matched what was happening in the rural area. And we also looked at developing a framework that we could use to create 2 pilot communities to take a look at how could we create a community system that would help seniors engage in utilizing the internet. When we looked at the technologies and framework, as we sifted through things, we tried to focus on information that we gained from the Center for Technology and Aging. And they looked at technologies for seniors in 4 main categories. Those that deal with body support systems, monitoring, as well as physical and mental health issues. They look at home environment issues, those kinds of things that help support monitoring and maintain a functional status of the older American adults' homes and the environment that's in them. The community technologies that enable older adults to stay socially connected to families and friends. And then the caregiving technology. Technologies and products that support both the formal caregivers and the informal caregivers. So we took a look at all of those technologies. And what we found was there's lots and lots of technology out there. It's just increasing at a rapid pace. And it's not so much the brand of technology it's finding the things that people are most comfortable with. The body monitoring technologies, they just increase rapidly. The smart homes, I think we're seeing a lot more of that. You've probably seen the smart homes where now there's lots of commercials on how we can control who's at the door and the temperature and all of those types of things. They're still not very well accepted by seniors, often looked at as intrusive, as well as the body monitoring. Most seniors don't want to have Big Brother watching them, they feel, until they have some type of crisis that's going to mean if that monitoring can help them stay in their home, then they want it, and they want it yesterday. So that's what we're taking a look at. What we found when we looked at all those practices were digital literacy programs are the most common approach for seniors. We're going to teach them how to set up an email. We're going to teach them how to use Facebook. The programs with the highest degree of success are those that have that human support. And you can see that in the Pew Research. What we found is it's not enough to have the technology. Most seniors, about 75% of them, say they need some help. They need someone to assist them with setting it up, being able to answer those questions. The healthcare programs that are out there are often really centered around specific concerns. Is it diabetes, which is a huge one? Heart monitoring? Those tend to be the things that people go to and look for online services. And what we found is our healthcare institutions really, they engage in some telehealth and telemonitoring, but they really don't have a lot of strategies out there for getting seniors or the rest of the population to do self-monitoring and figure out how to engage them. And you'll see that when you go to a healthcare facility and they will hand you at the reception desk. You can check your health records, make your appointments, and they'll give you a little card that says, here, go online and set it up. The problem is no one shows them how to set it up and how to utilize it. So what we found is programs generally have one purpose, and they're not really that holistic community development approach. And so what we wanted to know is that true for Wisconsin? And that's where we did all the focus groups. And we did find that, yep, that pretty much rang true for seniors. Our lessons learned, from our focus group, that seniors are adopting technology. Women are doing it more than men. And their age has a big factor, plays a big factor. Those who are in that 65, under 65 or more, apt to adapt, although they're really bookends all the way across the spectrum. Some that don't want to at all. What we found is they really, really need to see cost benefit to why they should be connected. Obstacles that we know is the lack of adoption. Fear and identity theft is a huge one. Dealing with scams, how do we, the unknown, how do I know what's out there? What's fake, what's not? So being able to develop some type of platform where it's a safe place for them to go. Keeping up with technology. They know more than learn something and the whole platform changes. There's something new happening. Lack of devices, and some just simply have no desire. And I think that's something that we have to remember. It's not going to be something that everyone's going to want to latch on to. Number one motivating factor for adoption is contact with family and friends. I think, who's the number one user gaining in Facebook right now is women 55 and older. And why? They want to know what's happening with their grandkids that are all over the country. Huge motivator for folks. I like to call it, it's our carrot. If we can get them socially connected, that's the carrot that is most likely to get them engaged. Changing life events, medical events, can trigger and serve as motivators. If there's a cost benefit, they can see a financial saving, then they're into it. Increased access to information is another one, as well as helping them access things that can help them remain independent. Healthcare, shopping, banking, all of those types of things. So that was kind of our phase one. As we moved into phase two, what we took a look at was developing a two pilot program, is that we could test out what we learned and take a look at it from a community development approach. Because we found most were one faceted program, we said we need a community development approach to senior adoption. And it's only going to be successful if we have all the players at the table. What we found in the research is a lot of the programs that are out there, once the funding for the program went away, the program went away. It wasn't sustainable. And it's because they didn't have all the community connections. So we put together a new advisory group, recognizing we needed a little broader scope. So our advisory at a state level, we really looked at senior resources. Wisconsin aging professionals are involved in that. The state director from AARP is an active member. AARP has some wonderful resources and are really looking and excited about connected aging communities, because they think it really parallels what AARP is looking at with their livability index. Has anyone looked at AARP's livability index online? I really encourage you to go and do that. If you go to livability index, AARP.org, they have a great index that takes a look at creating livable communities. And the livable communities that they talk about, look at it from a community development aspect. Everything from housing and transportation, healthcare, walkability, broadband, all of those types of things are in there. And the things that they identify, we find really are good for seniors, but they're also, many of the things that are there are the same types of things that millennials are looking for in a community. So how do we look at communities to create aging-friendly communities, but also communities that can be intergenerational and support one another? So senior resources are one of our groups. Community economic development, we've taken a look at incorporating that. How does our business community work to help seniors stay in their home, and how can they engage seniors through broadband and internet? Healthcare providers. I'm really excited we have a strong healthcare connection. We have Wisconsin Hospital Association, Wisconsin Health Cooperative, we have the Marshfield Clinic System, all looking at how do we bring telehealth and medicine into our projects. And then policy makers. We have the governor's northern rep, Marianne Lippert, on our committee, as well as Senator Tiffany. So we're really looking at policy. Extension isn't necessarily the one who's out doing the policy, but what we're finding is our advisors are taking the information that's learned and they're running with it. They're looking at barriers for senior adoption that are preventing seniors from adopting, and taking that on a state and national level to say, how do we overcome these barriers, especially in the healthcare arena? How does reimbursement from Medicare and Medicaid, the lack of reimbursement for telemedicine and monitoring at home prevent folks from adopting? So we're looking at, our healthcare providers are really looking at building that into their policy platform as they go and meet with elected officials in Washington and within the state. Our two communities that we're working with right now are Manitouche Waters, small rural community, Vilas County, and the other is Price County. It started with Park Falls, with the healthcare group calling, putting in the application from the hospital and home care and the clinic, and they've now expanded to include the Phillips and Park Falls area together. What we're doing with these two committees is trying to take a holistic approach, so it's sustainable. And we're really looking at Cotter's organizational change framework. You might remember the book we're all reading about changing the iceberg and the penguin. We're taking that same kind of framework, Cotter's framework, to really look at helping communities walk through that process of how do we create urgency, creating a team, helping them get their vision, communicating their vision, and developing an action plan with some short-term wins, and then how do we retool it and make some long-term plans to make it fit. So our two pilot communities have been working now for about 8 months. They have developed some teams. Our teams, so Manitouche Waters team, started out with the social connections that we talked about as their carrot. They really developed a nice program, Coffee and Connections, with the school. The middle school kids are serving as mentors. The school opens their doors once a month for programs where they do some training, the staff does, and then the kids do some one-on-one, which is being backed up and supported by the library system, who does in-between sessions where people come in. They're using tablets for some memory care games and different things, and they're bringing in community speakers now. Health and Human Services there is coming in, Veterans Service, and they're going to be offering programs on how to apply for Medicare, some different hobbies. And then they're also looking at the business community and how can we help promote some online shopping, because they're kind of in an area where there isn't transportation for seniors, and they have a limited grocery store. So they're looking at some of those programs. Our Park Falls group also has school programs on digital literacy, working with the school system. We've got the technical college involved and two of the high schools with senior mentors. And we have so many mentors. We have about a 1-to-1 ratio. They're also expanding their mentorship program, and Retired Teachers Association is helping with that. They're moving into healthcare and looking at some more telemonitoring. They are adding more telehealth equipment with cooperation from two of the partners now, with the hospital and the home care, or hospital and the clinic, and looking at how we can expand that into home care. And so they're moving in that arena. They'll be doing the men's health fair this month and doing some demonstration. And they're going to use the computers. The carrot's going to be teaching folks how to go online and register, get a fishing license, and how do we register a deer, and all those sports type things as the carrot and then work them into the healthcare. So those are our two pilot areas that we're working on. Our two pilot groups are working, we'll be working with them through this year, and then writing up our case studies that we have, trying to look at duplication and how we can spread the project to other communities. We are really looking at it as a community development model, thinking that that's what our niche is. How do we bring all the players together to build it into everyday life? Community businesses, whether it's grocery or the sport shop or banking and healthcare. So it becomes part of everyday living. So everyone's got a piece of it. And it's not relying solely on one group for delivery. So that's a little bit about what we're doing. I'm here to answer questions. If anybody's interested in looking at how you might do something in your own community, Shirley would love to spend some time with you and talk about what some possibilities might be.
Gail, this is Libby, and I made a couple notes while you were talking, and one thing that intrigued me was your comment about they need to understand the cost benefit. And I'm just wondering if you can speak just a little more to that. Is that more in terms of intangible things like their time versus getting to see their children and grandchildren on Facebook, or is it an actual monetary cost benefit that they are concerned about?
We're looking at both. Cost benefit also as far as dollars and cents. And in fact, this is one of the things, we just pulled together a national group of extension folks looking at broadband, and that's one of the fact sheets that we decided we're going to try to tackle within this year. It's also cost benefit of how can they save possibly on things financially. Healthcare costs, what we're seeing, just working with one of the clinics, Marshfield Clinic, they had done some Care My Way things that aren't directly related to seniors, and taking a look at medical cost benefits, taking a look at how people might save on their healthcare costs. We're going to try to put some dollars to that. How people might save on groceries, especially in rural communities, transportation, how folks might save on buying things online compared to having to travel an hour and a half. So we're actually looking at both of those, and I'm hoping that we can develop kind of a report card of places that people can take a look at, shopping around by doing some online shopping, where we might put some dollars and cents to that.
Sure. So that leads me to the other question I wanted to ask. As a person who's had their identity stolen, and I don't believe it happened through online shopping at all, but is that a hurdle with our older population to help them understand what's safe, what's not safe, and especially since we hear in the news a lot about identity theft, and especially as we're going into tax season, that's probably front and center on a lot of people's minds. Can you speak to that for just a moment as well?
Yep. So cybersecurity, identity theft is a huge barrier we found nationally and within the state. In fact, it is one of the things that AARP is looking at as well. AARP looks at scams and those types of things overall. They have touched a little bit on cybersecurity. And that's one of the things we're working on, trying to develop some materials, again, at the national level, as we're working with our other extension colleagues on cyber security and how do we avoid some of those issues. What do we look for? Some of the safety. Our two pilot communities are also doing, as they do some of their senior classes, some general, as we work through working with setting up email and doing Facebook and all those other types of things. We talk about cybersecurity. We also talk about in banking. What do we look for? When do you give your password? Who should have those? So we're working on some of those things because that's a huge barrier. Anybody who is online knows it's real easy to have someone hack in and steal things, and we've seen that with major corporations. It's not something that people are going to stop using, so we have to teach people how to use them as safely as possible, what to watch out for, and when something happens, what do we do? Law enforcement's eager to work with groups, which is real exciting, so we'll be engaging them in our community projects as well. And like I said, we're working on some materials and hope that we can have some of those deliverables coming up soon.
Sure.
Go
ahead. Well, it just makes me think of another concern is that sometimes people, and this includes old and young, overshare in social media, like I'm going on vacation. Well,
yep.
And that can be dangerous because if you've shared everything about where you live and all of those things, that could become not a cybersecurity issue, but a home security issue. So it seems like there certainly is a pretty big learning curve for everybody at every age, but also helping our older folks to recognize that even though they're maybe only friends with a handful of people, there could be a case where they're oversharing things that might put their safety at risk as well. So
absolutely, that's a huge part. Things like we're also seeing a lot of seniors who share on Facebook. They're being targeted for folks, dating centers, or people who are looking for companionship that kind of work and weasel their way in through wanting to be their friends. So teaching people who to be friends with and how do we go through that process. I just got another one yesterday, someone fishing and looking for, you know, who is this person? And you get these emails, you know, from, I want to be your friend, or the Facebook notice. So, that is a huge part. Another that deals kind of along the same security that we're taking a look at is, how do you store all those things that online and who has access to them and what happens to them when someone passes away? Their whole identity and who has access to those records online and what happens to my Facebook account and my online banking account. And so that's another issue that national group is taking a look at. And hopefully we'll be able to develop some program and some materials to help folks.
So I want to leave a moment if there's others online who have questions for Gail. And also I want to remind you that in the announcement we do have her contact information, and her information is on Kristen's Coffee Break professional development space. And so it sounds like Gail is open to answering questions and helping some of us out in our counties. Is there anybody else who would like to ask her a question now?
Yeah, this is Karen in Outagamie.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. And maybe I missed it because I had a couple interruptions, but are you talking about possible expansion of the project, like into Northeast Wisconsin in the near future?
I don't have dollars right now, Karen, to give community funding.
Okay.
But I would be more than open to coming and helping people talk through and creating your group and what you might need to do. We're certainly, as we move through, we want to share the lessons learned from our two pilot communities. The goal is to have other communities try to replicate the things that work. And like I said, it's really a community development model. And I'm more than willing to come and meet with groups and talk through how they might explore creating something in their own community.
Okay. Yeah, we have a digital divide. I mean, the five cities is really rich, and there's so much availability, and then you had North, and they still have dial-up.
Yep.
And so, and the connectedness and transportation issues, you know, are there as we have an aging population, as you've noted.
Yep.
So connecting people is so important.
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll see where this takes us. Thank you.
Yep.
So again, I'd like to thank Gail, and we don't really have a way of clapping on a whist line, so just know that we are very appreciative of you filling in for Kristen, and still after this time has passed, I have no notice of any new baby. I want to remind everyone that in a month from now, on March 2nd, we will also have a guest, because by then we know for sure there will be a baby. And we will be posting the audio from this, as well as contact information for Gail. So look for that if you want to reach out to her after today. And again, thank you so much, Gail, and everybody have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.